The Pastoral Epistles of 2 Timothy and Titus, in a Nutshell, by Bart D. Ehrman, read by John Paul Middlesworth. I now continue with my nutshell overviews of the pastorals by summarizing 2 Timothy and Titus. I begin with a 50-word overview of the book of 2 Timothy. 2 Timothy, a more intimate letter, allegedly by Paul to Timothy, recounts their past relationship, expresses hope that his disciple will come to visit him in prison in Rome, and urges him to fulfill his duties as leader of the church by quashing false teaching and maintaining his upright character. Here's a longer sketch of the book from my New Testament introduction. 2 Timothy. The second pastoral epistle presupposes a somewhat different situation from the first. It, too, is written by, quote-unquote, Paul to Timothy. Now, however, Paul is in prison in Rome, 2 Timothy 1:16 and 17. His location in 1 Timothy was not specified. And here he is clearly expecting to be put to death soon, 4:6 through 8, after a second judicial proceeding. The first one evidently did not go well, 4:17. He writes to Timothy not only to encourage him to continue his pastoral ministry and to root the false teachers out of his church, but also to ask him to join him in Rome as soon as possible, 4:21, bringing along some of his personal belongings, 4:13. In this letter, we learn something more about Timothy himself. He is portrayed as a third-generation Christian, having been preceded in his faith by his mother Eunice and his grandmother Lois, 2 Timothy 1:5. He was trained in the scriptures from his childhood, 3:15, and as an adult became a companion of Paul, collaborating with him in his mission to some of the cities of Asia Minor, 3:10 and 11. He was ordained to Christian ministry through the ritual of laying on of hands, 1:6, 4, 1 through 5. As the author's faithful representative in Ephesus, one of the few anywhere evidently, see 1:16 and 17 and 4:10 through 18, Timothy is charged with overcoming those who lead the saints astray with their idle talk and corrupt lives, 2:16 through 18, 23 through 26, 3:1 through 9, and 4:3 through 5. There is even less evidence concerning the nature of the false teaching here than in 1 Timothy. Two of the opponents are specifically said to have claimed, quote, that the resurrection has already taken place, unquote, 2 Timothy 2:18. A claim that sounds familiar from other Pauline writings we have examined. But mostly, the author attacks his opponents with general slander, providing no specifics concerning what they actually said. Thus, the opponents are called, quote, lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, inhuman, implacable, slanderers, profligates, brutes, haters of good, treacherous, reckless, swollen with conceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, holding to the outward form of godliness, but denying its power. Unquote. 3 verses 2 through 5. They may well have been all of these things and more, but the passage provides no clue about what they actually taught or stood for. Timothy, in any event, is to oppose them with all his strength and to continue the ministry that Paul has assigned to him until he comes to see the apostle in his bondage in Rome. Finally, among the pastorals, I move to the letter to Titus. Here is a 50-word summary. The third pastoral epistle is allegedly written by Paul to a one-time companion, appointed leader of the church in Crete, Titus, with many themes comparable to those of 1 Timothy, encouraging him in his pastoral duties, urging him to correct false teachings, and exhorting him to maintain a good character. Titus. The book of Titus is far more like the first pastoral epistle than the second. Indeed, the letter seems to be something like a Reader's Digest version of 1 Timothy, with its list of qualifications for church leaders and its moral instructions for members of the congregation in their relations with one another. The presupposed situation is that Paul has left his trusted comrade Titus on the island of Crete as an apostolic representative to the church there, Titus 1:4 through 5. In particular, Titus is supposed to appoint elders or bishops in the churches of every town, 1:5 through 9. Quote-unquote, Paul is now writing to urge Titus to correct the false teachings promoted by Jewish Christian believers, which appear to involve both complicated mythologies that confuse the faithful, 1:10 through 16, and genealogies and quarrels about the law, 3 verse 9. As in 1 Timothy, the false teaching may therefore involve speculations similar to what would later develop into Gnosticism. Titus is not to argue with these people. He is to warn them twice to change their views and afterwards simply ignore them. Quote, "Since you know that such a person is perverted and sinful, being self-condemned," unquote. 3:11. The errant parties themselves, needless to say, probably thought otherwise. A good portion of the epistle contains the apostle's sage advice to various social groups within the congregation. Older men, chapter 2, verse 2, older women, 2, 3, younger women, 2, 4 through 5, younger men, 2, 6 through 8, and slaves, 2, 9 through 10. Near the end, the advice becomes more general in nature, involving basic admonitions to engage in moral behavior in light of the new life for those who have been saved, 3:1 through 7, especially verse 5. The letter concludes with several greetings and a request for Titus to join the apostle in the city of Nicopolis, where he plans to spend the winter, 3:12. There were several cities of this name in Asia Minor and elsewhere in the empire. It is not clear to which of these the author refers.